Hi, friends. Ron here. In a moment, I'm going to join Donna and our wonderful guests for this month's episode of Practical Significance. But first, I bring you a word from our sponsor, Model Assumptions. I'm talking to you privately because conversations about model assumptions can be very awkward. It's quite possible no one has had a heart-to-heart discussion with you about this. And if not, well, it's time for that chat. You may not have noticed the symptoms. It's just a basic study and a simple statistical analysis, you thought. Surely I don't need to worry. Not so, my friend. From the design of your experiment through the collection of your data and on into the analysis of your results, model assumptions were hidden there all along. Maybe you learned about some of them in school. And if you're lucky, maybe your statistical software warned you about others. But come on, let's be honest. You didn't pay attention to the warning signs. You thought, I'm good. I'm protected. Worse, many assumptions look just like innocent research choices. How you dealt with missing data, or accounted for measurement errors, or handled data categories combined after data collection. These actions you never stop to think about can have uncomfortable consequences. This is why I'm having this private moment with you. With a simple step, you can spare yourself the wasted time and potential embarrassment of violated model assumptions. Consult a professional statistician. Don't wait until it's too late. Make that call today. And now, let's join the podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science, and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Director of Strategic Initiatives, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Welcome, everyone, to Practical Significance. Ron and I are very excited about this month's podcast because we get the opportunity to talk to four of our wonderful colleagues, the members of the ASA Meetings Department. And we are going to do this conversation in two parts. So first, we're joined by Kathleen and Kristen, and then we'll have Naomi and Christina join us for the concluding conversation. So I want to start by welcoming Kathleen and Kristen and asking you to introduce yourself to our audience and tell us how long you've been at the ASA. And Kathleen, I'll start with you.
Well, thanks, Donna. I'm Kathleen Wirt. I'm the Director of Meetings with the ASA. And my goodness, I started with ASA in October of 2003. So I always think of it as how many JSMs have I had? So my first JSM was 2004 in Toronto.
That is really exciting. And actually, Kathleen, I think I've heard Wendy Martinez tell stories about your first program committee meeting and how appreciative she was of all your expertise. So welcome to the podcast. And Kristen, how about you?
Hi, I'm Kristen Mohebi. I have been with the ASA for a little over 3 years, and I am a meeting planner and I help manage CSP, the biopharmaceutical workshop in the fall, and then parts of JSM as well.
So thank you for joining the podcast, and I'm excited to talk with you about the joint statistical meetings. I am a JSM junkie. I've been to every one of them since the first one I attended in 1985. I'm really eager to get back to meeting in person, but we'll talk about that again in a little bit. I want to start by asking you, and maybe we'll go with Kristen first and then Kathleen, how do you prepare for a meeting?
That is such a loaded question. So initially, we start from the beginning with the program. So that's kind of the biggest thing that we start with first. And that's getting all the submissions from potential presenters and organizing all that information and getting it to the committee so they can evaluate those submissions and pick and develop a wonderful program that we all attend. I also deal with a lot of logistics with the hotel and AV companies and making sure that we have all the equipment and food and beverage and everything that we need on site. And then there's also a proponent that I do as well internally with our graphics team, developing all of our marketing materials and getting the website created and having those programs and signage ready to go when you get on site. So there's a lot of moving parts. I can say that we wear a lot of hats as a meeting planner and we're juggling 12 balls at a time, but it's really great and exciting and always ever changing.
Thanks, Kristen. Kathleen?
Kristen definitely covered the size and scope. So I would say lots of timelines, lists, and planning. If you mean right before the meeting, then I'm going to say lots and lots and lots of coffee. What's interesting is where you start. And most frequently, you start with goals. And what's the point of a meeting? And usually for us, that would be for attendees to learn and to make connections. And as you go through and start to do all of the logistical planning that Kristen mentioned, a lot of those decisions come back to how to promote that learning.
So Kathleen, I'll follow up with you on this one. And that is, how do you keep up on trends? So I know you've been with the ASA since your first JSM in 2004, but I think you've been involved in the industry for a while. So what's your source of learning?
Believe it or not, there are associations for meeting and event planners and meeting and conferences about how to plan meetings and conferences. I participate in a few of those knowledge sharing groups, and it may sound silly, but you learn a lot by being an attendee at their events and other events. And so there's a lot of camaraderie and groups where you have colleagues that do the same thing and you can learn from what they're doing. What's really kind of fun is that the meeting planner groups that put on their conferences, they try new trends so that we don't have to. We can learn from what they're doing. So that's a lot of fun to experience. It's interesting to see the different ways that they use technology and that we get to experience that and then hopefully bring those ideas into our meetings at the ASA.
And Kristen, I'll follow up with you and ask, do you use social media? I learn a lot about our stats on Twitter by following a really wonderful community. Is there a meeting planner social media community?
There is, and one in particular is actually Facebook. There are Facebook groups for meeting planners nationally, and it's really great because we can all come together and connect, ask questions, and also I can kind of see what my colleagues are doing, especially during things going on with COVID. You can kind of see some of the trends and new ways people are implementing different policies and procedures in place all in that forum. So it's really great to have that available.
I think it would be nerve-wracking to be the meeting planner who plans the meeting for meeting planners. Seems like there's a lot of pressure there. It'd be like being the person who gives a presentation on how to give good presentations. A lot of extra stress. But you have been very successful at meeting planning and especially planning of virtual meetings. And I know, I'm sure anyway, that both of you are eager to have people back to have an in-person meeting. But are there things that you have learned from the virtual meeting planning that will help you, will guide you with planning the upcoming in-person meetings? And Kristen, I'll call on you first.
Yes. So I think now that we've had virtual meetings, once we move to in-person, there's always going to be a want and a need to connect in some way virtually as well. So while everyone's connecting in person, there's a small aspect of how can we engage one another either through an app or by maybe having some content available on demand. But I think that people are moving towards wanting that cohesion between the two. And so being able to do virtual events has allowed us to kind of look at different opportunities or solutions to incorporate that.
Thanks. And that will open up a lot of opportunities for people who might not have the opportunity to participate in other ways. Kathleen, what about you? What insights do you have on this?
We learned a lot about the technology available and are now working on how we can use that for in-person meetings. And I know it's tricky because you want to integrate what worked well without taking away from what attendees like about being face-to-face. But much like, you know, there are presentations that lend themselves towards a poster or a display, and then others that are better as paper presentations or oral presentations. The same thing is true of what we're learning from virtual meetings. There are times when that technology and that presentation style is going to work well and we just need to integrate it into our face-to-face meeting.
Okay, so Kathleen, I know that you have been at the ASA for a long time, but I'm still going to ask you this question of what's the biggest misconception about your job? And I know it's hard to maybe identify one, so feel free to identify one or two.
I think the first thing I feel like I have to correct when people ask what I do and they go, oh, you're a party planner. And party planners are great and weddings are wonderful and all those social events. But really what we do is more education-based. I'm looking at ways to create an environment that is structured for learning and networking. And if you happen to have a good time while you're there, that's great too. So the second I would say, I think people think that things should be or are simpler than they actually are. And so I think of events like the ballet, like it should be beautiful and wonderful and the attendees should have a great experience without really knowing all of the hard work that goes into producing it. But of course, the opposite side of that is that you just don't know how complex and complicated that production is. So I always appreciate our members are so fantastic. They really do notice and do thank us for the hard work that goes into it. So I'm always super appreciative of that.
Those are great. And Kristen, I know you've not been at the ASA that long, but what do you think are the biggest misconceptions about your job?
I'm going to echo Kathleen a little bit. I think people think I plan parties. I can't tell you how many times people tell me, oh, I have this coming up. Can you plan that? And I'm just like, that's not exactly what I do. So what we do, similar to what Kathleen says, is that we're trying to create an environment for learning, for networking, and creating this positive educational environment for everyone. But I think sometimes what seems like a simple solution in the normal world sometimes has major financial implications in our world. So just, you know, simple things like adding coffee or something that may be easy to do in a party situation can have major financial implications. And so for us, we have to always be aware of that and kind of compare the impact of the attendee experience and how we're reaching those goals and making sure that we are providing the best environment for learning and networking, and then also the financial impact as well.
So, Kristen, one of the first things that I learned about you is that you love to travel. So I want to ask you and Kathleen, although Kathleen has been to many more JSMs than you have, do you have a favorite city or venue for JSM or maybe for one of the other meetings that you have hosted?
Yeah, actually, CSP goes to New Orleans a few times, and it's actually one of my personal favorite cities because of the, you know, historic areas and how you kind of feel like you're transported in time when you're there. And we usually have a major draw of attendees there, so it seems to be similar to how I feel about the city. But in 2023, we're actually going to San Francisco for the first time, and we're very excited about being in the Bay Area and hopefully reaching some of those techie people that may not have originally attended CSP. So we're happy to kind of tap into that market and very excited about that.
So Kristen, I love San Francisco too, but I realize that Kathleen joined the ASA right when we last met in San Francisco for JSM. I think 2003 was maybe the last time we were there. But Kathleen, you've been to a lot of places. What are your favorites?
You are correct. I just missed San Francisco, which was a bummer. I can't play favorites with JSM cities, but what I can do is say I have a favorite set of circumstances. The best cities for us, for JSM and for me, are those that have a lot of space. The meeting space is stacked versus being several blocks long, and where there it has this unique mix of having lots of restaurants and hotels and activity nearby, so everything's easily walkable, but at the same time having easy access to parks, maybe a waterfront, places where we can get out and enjoy some of the local scenery and nature that's there. And that's kind of hard to find because you're looking for both city and nature in the same space. It's a little tricky. I'm hard pressed to give you cities that Seattle is like that. Boston is like that. Denver is like that.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, Kathleen, you and your team have done an amazing job of finding the unicorn of cities for us to go to. So we appreciate it. Okay, so I want to switch gears just a little bit and ask both of you, what do you like to do when you are not planning meetings? And so, Kristen, I'll start with you.
Yes. So I have a almost 2-year-old going on, I swear, 15-year-old. And she keeps me pretty busy when I'm not planning meetings. And she loves going outside and playing. And so we like to go out and explore, and just watching her learn and remember things is really exciting and rewarding. And if I'm not with her, I'm usually doing chores and I have headphones in listening to a podcast or an audiobook. I've really gotten into that lately. I'm not sure if Netflix counts, but it's definitely on the list of hobbies as well.
It definitely counts. And we probably need to ask you for your recommendations for the show notes. So, you know, be thinking about that.
Sure.
And Kathleen, what about you?
I have a similar problem with three teenagers at home. It seems like most of my time outside of work is as a taxi service or watching musical or theater performances or sports. But when I think about just for me, what I truly enjoy, I definitely reading. I also listen to lots of podcasts, although not as much now that I'm not driving to work every day. And live local music. That's definitely a passion. I like the little small venues that I can find with local bands.
Oh, that's great. Well, so we definitely want your recommendations in the show notes. Okay, so we'll wrap up by asking both of you, what are you looking forward to at the in-person? And I'm being very optimistic at the in-person JSM 2022. And Kathleen, start with you.
You know, I'm looking forward to the activity. We used to have fun seeing how many steps we take per day of the meetings department. With the virtual meetings, you are solving just as many challenges and they have to be done just as quickly, but you are chained to your computer all day for many days in a row. So as odd as it sounds, I'm looking forward to running the length of a convention center again. I can't wait.
That doesn't sound odd at all. And I can't wait to follow the meeting department step challenge as well. So Kristen, how about you?
For me, I just miss connecting with attendees. Like I miss those spontaneous personal connections that you make, you know, in the hall or in the elevator that I don't get to necessarily have when I'm doing a virtual meeting. Usually it's, you know, all business, like let's get this going. And so I'm really looking forward to connecting with the attendees and seeing how they've been over, you know, the past 2 years and hearing all their fun stories. So really excited about that.
Well, that's great. Well, Ron and I want to thank both of you for joining us. And now we are going to invite your colleagues, Naomi and Christina, to talk with us. Well, we are excited to continue our meetings department conversation, and we've been joined by Naomi and Christina. And so we're going to start by asking you to introduce yourselves and tell us how long you've been at the ASA. And Naomi, I'll start with you.
Hello, I am Naomi Friedman, another one of the meeting planners, as Donna said. I have been with the ASA, it will actually be 10 years in April, which is weird.
It is actually amazing how fast time goes.
Yeah.
It evaporates. And Christina, what about you?
Hi, I'm Christina Link. I have been with the ASA for 9 years, and I actually started about a month before JSM 2013 in Montreal. So it's been quite a ride since then.
So there's something about baptism under fire that's appropriate there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have lots of experience, obviously, having been with the ASA for so long. And thank you for that, by the way. I wanted to ask you how you prepare for a meeting. I know there's a lot of aspects to that. And I know that our podcast listeners don't know what most of them are. So how do you prepare for a meeting? Christina, I'll start with you.
That's a great question. Actually, we start planning a meeting about 18 months ahead of time, and we, you know, look for a venue. We take into consideration the steering committee or organizing committees, and it all kind of starts with really the location and the purpose of the meeting, but it's a long process. So just a constant cyclical thing.
I observed that basically you're always planning a meeting, planning a current meeting, you're planning the next meeting, and you have different meetings going at the same time. I'm going to come back to you, Christina, before I go to Naomi and say, do they ever jumble together in your head?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we have a hard time because we sometimes get years confused. You know, we'll be working in 2024 or 2025, and sometimes it just gets confusing what location, what meeting we're doing.
I can imagine it does. So Naomi, other than crunches and jogging and so on, how do you prepare for a meeting?
Oh, I don't jog. No. No, like Christina said, there's just a lot of moving pieces, and keeping everything straight is tea, and which is amazing because in my actual life, I am not an organized person. And yet, you know, working with multiple years of the same meeting or on multiple meetings at once that are not at all related to each other, it just kind of happens. But preparing for them, again, it's finding that location a year and a half, 2 years, sometimes even further out. And then just really working closely with the committees to make sure that everyone's kind of on the same page as far as what's expected and the program and what we can do logistically. Yeah, it's also a lot of keeping track of, like for me, I'll say, oh yeah, last year's meeting, but that might be the conference that just happened 2 weeks ago. So the current year for me is now the next meeting. So it's making sure that everyone's speaking the same language too.
Well, Naomi, I think actually people who have worked with you for meetings would be surprised to hear you describe yourself as not organized, but I guess it must just be that you're an Asana whiz. So a project management tool whiz, I guess.
It's organized chaos.
And there you go. That works. I'll start with you by asking, how do you keep up with trends?
It's just really following, like everyone has an industry. There is a whole industry for meeting planners. We have conferences for conference planners. I've attended those conferences before. I'm members of groups on Facebook, LinkedIn, there are hashtags on Twitter and Instagram. So really the same way that, you know, the ASA keep up on trends and what might, you know, what might be out there, just communicating and asking questions to see how other organizations handle things and going from there. See what takeaways might work for us.
And Christina, what about you? Are you a big social media user or do you prefer the conferences?
Absolutely. Just like Naomi said, we've attended meeting planner conferences. We also do quite a few webinars. Some of our meeting planning groups, they offer, you know, 1 hour sessions so we can kind of stay up to date on things that are happening, either new things with technology or things that are happening in each city, or, you know, even how to lay out spaces or set up food and beverage and that kind of thing too. So the webinars are really helpful. The conferences are helpful because we're in person. So we get to see how other planners set things up. And it's great to go on site like that because we can then incorporate those into the events that ASA attendees go to as well.
Can I jump in real quick to build on that? Just as one example, I had attended a conference, a meeting planner in Chicago, actually, right before JSM was in Chicago. And there were some serious issues at that conference with signage and just people getting lost in the convention center. I was one of those people. I could not find registration to save my life. So after that meeting, I came back and I had a serious talk with Kathleen. It's like, no, this is what we need to do so that this doesn't happen to our attendees. And it worked. It helped a lot.
And it did work. I will just say, Naomi, that for the first couple of days of the Chicago conference, I was sick as a dog. And so I needed the signs to help me figure out where everything was. And at your meeting planner conferences and so on, you learned a lot about planning virtual meetings, which has been very important for us. And I know that you are eager to move to in-person meetings. But we wanted to ask you if there are any lessons learned from virtual meeting planning that will help you as you plan upcoming in-person meetings.
I think the biggest takeaway from the virtual is that there really is no replacement for networking. That was, I think, the biggest challenge that we faced with the pivot to virtual. And it's what I think was really kind of missed. You know, we tried and there definitely were networking things that happened and people were connecting, which is great. It's just not that same experience. But the other takeaway for me is pivoting at that 11th hour and just making sure to be flexible. I mean, I've had things happen on site in a face-to-face in-person meeting before, but it's still not the same as flipping an entire program a couple of weeks. So it was definitely a learning experience.
Thanks, Naomi. Christina, what have you picked up from these virtual experiences?
Yeah, I would definitely echo what Naomi said. And then in addition to that, I think, you know, we've gotten so used to with the virtual flipping things so quickly that, you know, it's almost like everybody always expects an immediate response with things. So it's a lot easier to do turns with that. Whereas when we go back into person, I think we're all looking forward to a little bit slower pace, sort of, but also just seeing everybody again. I know for myself, after being on Zoom for 8 hours straight, it gets exhausting. And there is something really refreshing about walking around and being at the convention center or being at the headquarter hotel and seeing people and actually having conversations with them in person. I think that's what I've missed the most. And I think it's what Naomi says, what we missed the most out on when we had the virtual conferences.
Christine, I'll stay with you and ask probably a tough question, but ask you to describe the biggest misconception about your job.
Oh, no. I think, that's a hard one. I think the biggest misconception is that the way we have priced out virtual conferences or just conferences in general is that we are in it to make money. I don't necessarily think that people realize the actual costs that are associated with having an in-person meeting or even a virtual meeting and how expensive food is and how expensive the service charges for all the employees at a hotel or even AV costs and rentals and those sorts of things. So, you know, ultimately our job is to put on a great show, but do it in the most cost-effective way possible. For me, that was one of the biggest misconceptions, that we're just making a ton of money off some of these conferences when maybe that isn't necessarily the case.
I think that's a really important point to make. And Naomi, what about you? What would you say the biggest misconception is?
That I have any idea what I'm doing. No, really, I definitely agree about the pricing. Also, that for me, that I get to make big decisions. People will always come to me. I need this. I need to change the program here. I need to do X, Y, Z. And it's not necessarily a call that I am able to make. And I don't like not being able to do it. But there are things that, believe it or not, are out of our control and that other people need to weigh in on. And sometimes it's as simple as just going back to the committee. Sometimes it's going up the food chain at ASA. Sometimes it's just not humanly possible. But I think that that's one of the challenges that I face sometimes, where as much as I like to think that I am in control of the situation, I'm really not.
Seems like a metaphor for life, Naomi. I will add that with JSM, it's that J, the joint and joint statistical meetings, that adds to that level of complexity, or maybe to say that need to consult with others, that decisions that look simple are not so simple. Appreciate both of you, your candor on job misconceptions. Now I want to turn to something fun. With your combined 19 years of experience, have been to a lot of places. Do you have a favorite city or venue? Let me ask Christina first.
That's really hard. I think, you know, certainly we have favorite locations based on just how beautiful certain cities are, like Vancouver or fun cities like Chicago. Sometimes what makes it great for us is different for an attendee. So for us, we're looking at, you know, our favorite places are, as far as hotels, is how easy a property is to work with, or how inexpensive things are, or just how much it made our lives easier by going to a particular place. And I know Naomi would agree with me, but we ended up having meetings, two different meetings at the same property in Bellevue, Washington. And it was probably one of the best locations and best venues that we've ever held a meeting at. Other than that, I'm actually looking forward to, we're getting ready to have our ICHPS conference coming up here in 2023 in Scottsdale, Arizona. And we've never had a ASA meeting in Scottsdale before. So I am excited about trying in a new place.
And the fact that that happens in January doesn't have anything to do with your excitement at all, I'm sure.
That's right.
Naomi, how about you?
Well, as Christina said, that it was the Hyatt Regency Bellevue. Donna, you were at both of those meetings too for SDSS and WSDS. Just the layout of the space was great. Everything, like the staff there, it was all perfect. But one of my favorites was actually one of the hotels we had in Vancouver, the Pan Pacific, because in their elevators, every day they change out the area rug that's in the elevator, so it has the day of the week on it. And you all know, when we're at conferences, especially like JSM, we are there as staff for almost 2 weeks. You lose track of time. So it would be, you know, 6 a.m. I'm barely awake, trying to find coffee, going downstairs to head to the convention center, and I could look down and see what day it was. Every hotel in the world should do that.
That is fantastic, Naomi. That is a reason to go back to Vancouver if there weren't lots of other reasons to visit that beautiful city. I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and I'm going to ask, what do you like to do when you're not planning meetings? And Naomi, I'll start with you.
Sleep.
That works.
No, mostly I just kind of hang out with friends. I I've been reading a lot recently and hang out with my dog and get on my spin bike, as you know, Donna.
Yep, I was going to say, there's a little spinning in there.
that's been my vice for the pandemic.
Oh, that's great. And Christina, what about you?
Spending a lot of time with my family. I have an 11-year-old who's pretty active. So, you know, we're trying to get out on the weekends and do fun things. But also, since the pandemic started, I got into yoga. So I've been doing that a lot. And Naomi actually introduced me to spinning. I've started that as well. So trying to be more fit.
I'm not sure that maybe the three of us, you know, haven't even been on that spinning bike at a virtual conference. You know, just saying, maybe.
No, I would never monitor a session while doing a spin class.
Yeah, no, of course not. No. Okay, so we want to conclude by asking you what you're looking forward to about JSM 2022, which will be in Washington, D.C. And Christina, start with you.
I think just being in person, seeing everybody face to face and not being on Zoom all day.
I think we would all champion that. But Naomi, what about you?
That, I mean, yeah, I'm looking forward to really seeing people and, you know, actually earning all of my steps again. We would get a little competitive in the convention center during JSM to see who's getting the most steps in every day. And we haven't been able to do that because sitting in front of the computer for Zoom for 8 hours is not really conducive to that.
Yeah, you know, Kathleen shared about the steps, and I guess I'm thinking that we are going to have an addition to the JSM app, which is the meetings department step challenge, so that, you know, we all can take wagers on who's going to come out on top.
This explains a lot of things, because I've seen Naomi walking around with little tiny steps in the meetings, and now I understand what's going on.
You never know.
Well, Naomi and Christina, we have so enjoyed having you on the podcast. We are delighted that we had a chance to meet the entire meetings department by having conversation with Kathleen and Kristen earlier. And so we want to thank you very much for all that you do. And with that, I'll also thank our listeners and turn it over to Ron for the top 10, which is the highlight of the podcast.
Thank you, Donna. Hey, friends. Donna and I are in our fourth decade of working together. And if she knows anything about me, it is that I have an irresistible attraction to puns. Now, you can go most anywhere to get puns. Go to a website. You can go to an obnoxious relative. But only on the Practical Significance podcast can you get the definitive list of bad puns about statistics. Recognizing that bad puns is redundant, here are the top 10 bad statistics puns. Number 10, the unfortunate student hadn't studied, so they just guessed that p-hat was another name for a bedpan. Number 9, when mathematical statisticians get carded, they show their IID. Number 8, statisticians mean well. Number 7, what keeps a criminal statistician in a jail cell? Error bars. Yeah, of course. Number 6, Bayesian's favorite rapper is MC Hammer. Number 5, we thought about offering virtual JSM sessions by semaphore, but the plan raised red flags. Might have to think about that one a minute. Number 4, at first they thought the whole tree was involved, but it turned out only to be a stem and leaf plot. Number 3, I can state categorically that I hate data that classified into a fixed number of distinct groups. Number 2, the Poisson distribution was named after the French mathematician Distribution. And the number 1 bad statistics pun, I like working on the variance or the standard deviation, but when it comes to measuring spread, I am most at home on the range. Well, that's it. Thank you for listening to the March edition of the Practical Significance podcast. We look forward to chatting with you next month.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmpStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.